are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very first time. Welcome aboard. I'm delighted you're here, and I hope you make a habit out of it. Okay, now, I want to thank everyone who's been sending me emails about error messages that they get on our website or alerts that they were getting. You know, we got hit. We got attacked again. And look, don't panic with that. This thing has been going on since the year 2000 when I started this show. Okay, for 9 years we have been the target of attacks, and I suspect we shall continue to be because I don't intend to change. And, you know, I guess there are people that just hate freedom of speech, and they're going to continue to do this. But anyway, thanks for sending me all the emails letting me know what kind of problems you were encountering on the website. We took the whole thing down. We rolled out a backup. And then the backup, of course, was from several days ago. Well, things change every single day on our website. And so we have been all last night up until 4:45 this morning. We've been reinstalling things. I finally had to get a few hours sleep. I got about 4 or 5 hours sleep, and then got up and continued reinstalling things that, you know, had changed since that backup had been done. And so everything should be back up and working. Some things had to be completely reinstalled, like the chat room. That had to be completely redone. We lost everything in the guest book. You know, if you have signed our guest book in the past, it's gone. And feel free to sign up again in the guest book. But anyway, 99% back to normal. The rest of it will be rolled back into normal after the show tonight. So it's a big site. There's a lot of stuff there, and so it just takes some doing. Anyway, we've got that done, and that's a good thing. Now, last night, you were not able to subscribe to the K-Files e-zine. You can't subscribe to the K-Files e-zine if the links aren't in front of you, right? Well, it's back. And so let me encourage you, if you're not getting our free weekly newsletter, where's the genius in that? It is free, and, you know, this is where we keep people up to date on what's happening. And I get lots of emails from people who obviously either didn't hear all the announcements I've been making, or they are not subscribers to the K-Files e-zine, because we send all the information about what's happening here at the show in the K-Files e-zine, plus a lot of other good stuff. So like I said, where's the genius in that? If you're in the dark, it's because you choose to be, and you can just as easily choose to not be in the dark by clicking that button on our website that says K-Files e-zine. Did you know you can listen to this show on your cell phone? Some people know that, and some people have been listening to this show on their cell phone. Go over to iradiola.com or nd104.com. You'll see the instructions there, how you can listen on your cell phone. I'll be back in just a moment with my guest, Dean Warsing. You be here too, okay? Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Dean Warsing. While ice skating with a group of other people at the age of 12, Dean had a UFO sighting that he describes as up close and personal. As an adult, Dean heard Ed Grimsley talk about using night vision equipment to see UFOs, and like many of you, he was hooked. So these days, he teaches others how to look for and locate UFOs using night vision equipment. Dean will be speaking at the upcoming Ed Grimsley UFO Night Vision Skywatch Conference in Sedona, Arizona. Conference dates are May 22nd through the 24th. Dean, welcome to the show.
Kevin, thank you.
Dean, let's just begin where it all began for you at the age of 12. Take us back to that event and tell us what happened.
Well, basically, I was ice skating, and a couple of my brothers and my best friend, and I think there was a couple other neighborhood kids, and it was a moonlit night, and we could see very clearly. And then all of a sudden, something came across and just completely covered the moon.
Okay, now I assume when you say you were ice skating on a frozen pond or something like that?
Yes, sir. There was a frozen pond right behind our community where we lived.
Okay.
And the sky became dark, and this thing, Kevin, was the size of like a skyscraper. I mean, it was giant. We're talking, you know, Battlestar Galactica type size. And the interesting thing was, we would have never noticed if it didn't block out the moon. And the shade of black that it was you could distinguish it from the night sky, but just. It was very close to what the night sky looked like. And we all kind of freaked out a little bit. And I ran across a cornfield with my skates still on. I wanted to get my mother. I wanted her to see it. And unfortunately, from the viewpoint from the house, you couldn't even see it. You had to be right up and close to it. And this thing went right over our heads, and we could see it. And it wasn't smooth. It wasn't cigar-shaped. If anything, it's a weird encounter. I haven't heard anybody else really talk about something quite like this, but I would describe it as rectangle, and it had definition in it, almost like mechanical definition to it. So, and since then, you know, I am 46 year old now. I've talked to my brother every once in a while. 5 or 6 years will go by, and we'll go, "Hey, you remember that thing at the pond?" And we're all, "Oh yeah, you know." And my best friend growing up, he lives in a different area now, but on occasion I see him, and actually within the last year I mentioned something to him, and he goes, "Oh yeah, I remember." Because when you see something like that, it almost makes you feel like, oh, I was daydreaming, or maybe I'm not remembering it correctly. So it's a real treat to have a group of people that all saw the same thing.
You know, it's pretty interesting. To me it is. Maybe it is to others, maybe not. But a lot of us have had these sightings when we were kids, and they sort of lay dormant for a while for some people, and then from nowhere, other people who were around will say, "Hey, do you remember?" I had that happen to me. We had a sighting, myself, my sister, my mother, and dad, when I was about 8 years old. So my sister would have been 10, and years and years went by, and we never talked about it after the first week or so. It wasn't like there was no rule. I mean, it wasn't like there was a rule. There was no rule that said we couldn't talk about it. We just didn't. But years go by, and I'm in Macedonia working for international police, and I was in my late 40s, and I called my sister to wish her a happy birthday, and in that conversation she said, you know, do you remember when we were leaving the skating rink that night and this thing flew over us? And we talked about it for a while. Within the last 3 months, I was talking with my mother on the telephone, and she said, do you remember that time we were leaving the skating rink and that thing flew over us? And so these things lay dormant for a while, and then all of a sudden it's on everyone's mind. Now, the question, and it's just speculation, but I want to ask you what you think about it. Why do you think all of a sudden, and I say I'm hearing reports like this from a lot of other people, this is happening to a lot of other people where it's coming to their minds again. Why do you think it's like we're waking up and people are remembering?
Yeah. Well, I think as a race of people on planet Earth, we are. I mean, we are to a point in our spiritual development where we need to move past the notion that we're the center of the universe and we're the only people ever created. And it's time for us to kind of be able to confront this brotherhood that we have out there. Mm-hmm. And I think it's intended not to hammer anybody over the head with it. I think it's always done in a way like the Billy Myers case, where there's always like plausible deniability just in case it's too much of a reality break for you. But I think we're all being programmed in many different ways. I mean, even our media, Paula Harris does a great thing about how Hollywood is influenced by UFOs. So I think we're all being programmed and prepared. And I think you'll find, as generations go by, these younger generations and stuff probably are more prepared than past generations for this kind of change or this kind of mindset.
Are you familiar with a movie called Enemy Mine?
You know, that does ring a bell, but I can't recall. Is that
Dennis Quaid? Yeah, Dennis Quaid is a astronaut and gets stranded. He gets in. This is way into the future, but he gets into a dogfight out in space, and both he and the other craft that he's fighting crash. The other craft is occupied by what we would consider an alien being, and it's very reptilian, and it calls itself a Drac. And they become close friends because they're stranded. There's nobody on the planet but just them. And there's some strange planet. And they become friends. And the whole thing is sort of like programming your mind in the opposite direction from War of the Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And, I watched that just a couple of nights ago. I've seen it before, but it had been a while. But it seems like that there's a lot of programming happening. A lot of it happens to be the type that, we're going to have to fight these guys. And like Independence Day, War of the Worlds, etc. But there's a lot of it happening as well that is of a more peaceful nature. But the central theme is they're real.
Yes.
Now, let me ask you, Dean, you're a businessman.
Mm-hmm.
Being in business, especially right now, you really have to have your feet on the ground. You've really got to have your plow in the ground. And you got to be really anchored to survive in business right now.
Absolutely.
All right. Obviously, you're that sort of individual. How do you view this question about extraterrestrials? Do you think that they are real, or do you think they are not real and what we're seeing in the skies is of terrestrial origin?
Excellent question. I have no doubt they are real. And I think it's more real than we all probably ever imagined. And it's, and I think it's much more evident than people probably think. You know, truths are earned. You know, they're not just handed out for free. And anybody right now that it really is seeking the truth in this area or other areas of paranormal phenomena or reincarnation or what have it, if you got to, you got to do your homework. And if you do your homework, I don't think you'll have any doubt about the UFO phenomena that's occurring. And that's the really excellent reason why I got into the night vision thing, because I'm a real, you know, I'm what I call a wide open skeptic. I'm very skeptical, but I'm scientific, but I'm wide open. Mm-hmm. And if I can find a phenomena and apply some science to it, I'm just as happy as can be. And this night vision phenomena that Ed Grimsley has came across, I have taken it, observing with night vision goggles a little farther, where we can really kind of tell the difference between a satellite, a UFO, a bird, a bat, and get people educated. So when you get out there and you get the goggles and you see a craft that we're tracking, and all of a sudden it lights up and goes to outer space, you know that's not orbital mechanics. That's not an orbital body. Mm-hmm. That has to be something else. And that's happening all the time, Kevin. We're getting phenomena on almost any clear night.
You know, I out in Los Angeles, actually in Hollywood, Ed and I and a couple of other folks stood on the parking lot at the hotel where I was staying and used that night vision equipment to look into the sky. Now, I've said this before, but you're doing this all the time, so let me throw it out there. And if I'm wrong, you can say so.
No problem. Go ahead.
But when you look at the night sky, whether you see any UFOs or not, if you look at the night sky with the naked eye and then put the night vision goggles to your eyes and look at that same sky, it will blow you away how much there is out there that you couldn't see.
Absolutely. It's the difference between night and day. We're not even looking in the ultraviolet light band that our eyes normally use. We're using, it's an infrared band. And if you can see 10 stars, you look through the night vision goggles, you'll probably see 1,000. It's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's just incredible. And it was a cloudy night, but every once in a while there would be a break in the clouds. And we could see through, and both myself and a guy named Bill Rayling, I don't know if you know him.
No, sir, I don't.
Well, he and I both were looking through this hole in the clouds and saw two of these UFOs go streaking by. And way too fast to be satellites, way too close to Earth to be satellites, and plus, you know, they just they didn't look like satellites. And, you know, people say, well, how can you tell the difference? Well, you know, when you look through night vision and you see a bird, it looks like a bird.
Yes, sir.
When you look through night vision and you see a bug, it looks like a bug, just like mm-hmm. with your naked eyes. The only thing is you can see them at night where you probably wouldn't see them without the night vision goggles. But they look like what they are.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, when did you first? Let's go back to age 12. What happened after that? I mean, did this sort of burn into your memory or lay dormant for a while?
Well, it was something we talked about quite a bit, and I was a weird kid. I mean, I was into UFOs and paranormal things and ghosts and so forth. And even had interest along martial arts and hypnotism and just a lot of kind of crazy stuff that your average young kid doesn't even get into. Matter of fact, a strange thing is, Kevin, when I was about I don't know, 6 years old, I heard about falconry and was dead set on becoming a falconer. Well, you know, there's not that many falconers around. Why? I had this great interest in falconry. It's almost like a past life thing or something. I don't know. But I was just dead set and finally became a falconer and today am a master falconer. But I had a lot of things like that. But always had a belief in that area. So from there, I started doing like EVP work and things like that. Not much with the UFOs because I really didn't feel I could do anything with it. I always felt like I was really lucky to see what I saw, and maybe someday I'd be fortunate enough to be at the right place at the right time and something else would happen again. But it didn't seem like really scientifically there was anything I could do with it. Then I heard Ed Grimsley on the radio, and he talked about seeing the battles and seeing the UFOs and stuff, and I thought, that kind of went in my gray box. I kind of went, well, that's interesting. He sounds sincere, and he sounds like he's not, he believes what he's saying, but I wasn't sold exactly. And then at another date, he's on the radio again, and he brings a guy out, and this guy had some kind of background where he worked in special ops for NASA or somebody, and he had some knowledge about what we were flying secretly. And Ed took him out, and he said, I'm going to tell you, I can't explain it. I can't explain what I saw. So I went, wow, something's going on here. So I went out and bought night vision goggles.
Okay, now this guy that worked in special ops, he's the one that said, I can't explain what I saw, after he had been out with Ed Grimsley doing a night watch.
Absolutely, Kevin. He went out with Ed, and Ed showed him craft flying, and the guy just said, I have no explanation. That's nothing that I know of that we, the United States, have. And that really sold me to have somebody else kind of back up the whole thing.
So
I made the... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, when did you have your first attempt at doing a skywatch with night vision?
Well, my wife and I, after I bought night vision goggles, we bought one pair. We would go out, and we would see things on our own. We were kind of doing a couple things wrong as to the best time to go out and where to look and so forth. So I ended up calling Ed, and I said, Ed, you know, I heard you on the radio and everything. I bought night vision goggles, so forth and so on. And we ended up hitting it off real well on the phone, as Ed does with a lot of people. He's a real likable guy. And he goes, you know what? I'm doing a conference in Laughlin, Nevada. Why don't you come out and bring your goggles, and I'll take you under my wing, and we'll do, you know, night watches every night. So from doing it on a personal level with the wife, then I went out with Ed, and we started doing it with groups. And we probably took 1,000 people into the desert that week, all together, and showed them stuff.
Well, when you went out with Ed, did you see more? Was it easier to locate them?
No. It seems to be the same. I live on the East Coast, and I see just as much phenomena here as I did on the West Coast.
I hate to do it. We have to take a break. Folks, we'll be back. More with Dean Morsing right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Dean Morsing. Dean, when we went away for break, I had just asked the question, did you notice a difference? Were you seeing more when you were out there with Ed? And you just started to answer, and the break took over. So let's pick up there.
Yeah, it seems that there's as much phenomena on the East Coast as there is on the West Coast. I see plenty out here, and I saw plenty in Laughlin, Nevada when we were out there. And the interesting thing is, Joshua P. Warren had told me it was reported that there was more sightings in Laughlin, Nevada, the week of that UFO conference than anywhere else in the world. So it was particularly busy. But I, you know, it's just as good back here. It probably happens everywhere in the world, I imagine.
When you started using night vision and seeing UFOs, did it make any real change in you? I mean, were you awestruck, or was your response sort of, yeah, I kind of figured it was this way?
Good question. Well, two things. When I first started looking through night vision goggles, everything I saw that was just tracking straight, to me, it was just a satellite. I dismissed everything. Okay?
All right.
Because I was ignorant to what I was looking at. But every once in a while, I would get a gem, and that would be where something would be a rule breaker. It would just... it would light up and take off to outer space, or when we hit it with the laser, it would do a course correction. And those, to me, were kind of life-changing. Now, a good friend of mine that we've talked about UFOs and paranormal things for years and years and years just got his first chance to come out with me and take a pair of goggles, and I took him on a night watch. And the guy wasn't right for about 3 days. We were trying to carry on a conversation. He goes, you know what? My mind is racing with what we saw tonight. He goes, it's hard for me to put a sentence together. Kevin, to have something firsthand is so much different than second or third hand information. When it's yours and you own it and you saw it, you experienced it, it's a bigger deal.
Well, it certainly is. And also, now let me ask you this. Your friend, before he went out on this night watch with you, what was his attitude about the whole thing about UFOs?
Completely wide open to it. Watches UFO shows on TV, the History Channel, sci-fi. But he was completely open to it. You wouldn't think it would have made that big of an impression on him, but having that first-hand experience, sometimes it does.
Mm-hmm.
It just, it really can be moving.
Well, and see, this is the reason, one of the reasons, a big reason, why I say I don't believe in UFOs, because there's nothing to believe. They either exist or they don't, and if they do, they do.
Mm-hmm.
And when you put those goggles to your eyes and you look up into the skies and you watch them doing maneuvers up there, there's no longer any doubt as to whether they do exist or don't exist. And I think a big, big problem in the whole UFO community is they've bought into the idea that I think was planted by the disinformers and those who wanted to put a lid on the information, the idea that, oh, he's a UFO believer. Well, I don't believe in doorknobs. I know they exist. I don't believe in this video camera that's staring me in the face. I know it exists. I'm looking at it. And I think we have to have the same approach to this whole thing of UFOs. Either they do or don't exist. And if they do, they do. And that's the end of the debate. And as far as I'm concerned, what Ed Grimsley has done with night vision has ended the debate. Once and for all, it's over. Those things are up there.
Yeah, he sure has opened a wide door and given us a tool that anybody can look through and witness stuff. You don't have to be lucky anymore. You don't have to be special. You don't have to be a contactee. You can be me or you, and you can go out, and if you do your due diligence and spend your time in the field, you will see phenomena. And that's the great thing about these events like this one in Sedona. We have such a great time when we get like-minded people together in a group out there. And Sedona is such a beautiful area. This will be my first time from what I see in pictures and so forth. But boy, is it going to be fun. And it's always a treat for me to take people, especially the first time they've been out, and I can point out some stuff to them, and they're just oohing and on. And sometimes we have applause or, it's fantastic. It's really a lot of fun.
You've been taking people out on night watches.
Yes, sir.
How often have you seen people that had been skeptical, not just skeptical, skeptical's not a bad thing, but had been, I would say, active in their faith that it's all just nonsense. How often have you seen them turned around?
Well, I think everybody is a bit reserved. Even the people that are real believers, I still say there might be a part of their mind that's going, this might be explainable, or this is something different than what they think. Because it just doesn't seem right that we could use a piece of technology and look up at the sky and see things that we've never seen before. So there's always that surprise when you take people out, even people that are on the UFO side. But I'll tell you this, when we were in Laughlin, there was a particular UFO investigator, and this gentleman has probably spent 40 years of his life devoted to ufology, and all his information is second and third hand. And I said to him three or four times, I said, why don't you come out on a skywatch and see what we're doing? And I just could not convince him for the longest time to come out, because he already knew it was a bunch of garbage. He had made up his mind without looking that it wasn't true. And, you know, Kevin, the definition of stupidity is the unknowingness of consideration. So if you won't even consider that something's going on, you know, it makes you stupid. You know, you always have to be, you know, like I tell people, I say, don't believe everything, but consider everything. You know, never believe that your viewpoint is so on point that it can't be tweaked one way or the other with more information. But some of these guys already know, so they don't bother to look, you know.
It's pretty interesting, isn't it?
It is.
You know, you have people who, on both sides of the fence, have made up their mind. And this is what I'm getting at when I say there's nothing to believe. You know, what a waste of emotion and what a waste of mind power. There's nothing to believe. They either exist or they don't. And all you have to do to find out if they exist is go look.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just go look. And if you see them, end of debate. It's over.
Yeah.
But on both sides of the fence, you have people who have taken up position, and they will defend that position till the end of their life. And, you know, on both sides, you have people who say, well, they don't say it, but they live it, and that is this. Don't bother me with the facts. My mind is made up. And you have that on both sides of the fence.
Oh, yeah. It's called a fixed condition.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if as a young man, if you went to a party and you had a horrible time, you know, you could get into a fixed condition that parties are horrible, and I'll never go to a party again. We could have the greatest party in the world and invite you to it, but you're just like, no, parties are no good. You know, you just get in this fixed condition.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a certain type of insanity. You know, you're no longer evaluating correctly. You're judging it all by the one party that you went to. And it's just as bad for a guy like this amazing Randy. You know, he has an axe to grind in the complete different or the opposite direction. There is no paranormal there, you know, at all, where, you know, both extremes are wrong, and you're absolutely right. You have to fall somewhere in the middle there and stay objective about it.
You mentioned a moment ago that some people have that sort of reservation in their minds that, well, you know, this might be explainable. Well, you know, I have a challenge for that. If it might be explainable, then do it. It's sort of like people who, they say that the ancient Egyptians built those pyramids, and they used slave labor, and they used these ropes and dragged these giant stones and had logs on the ground that they rolled on. Okay, challenge is simple. Do it.
Right.
Just build one half as big as the Great Pyramid. How about a quarter as big, using the technology that they tell us was used? Use the copper tools they say were used, and just do it. And then at that point, I'll buy the story. The reason that they haven't done it is because it cannot be done in that way.
Yeah.
And the same thing with UFOs. The reason they're called UFO is because they are unidentified, meaning folks don't know what they are.
Exactly. Yep. And I love the idea that we can take this and apply some science to it. And we know what orbital bodies do. And we're just seeing things that aren't orbital bodies. They're not satellites.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that they're in outer space because they're reflecting sunlight. At nighttime, you have to be that high, you know, for the sun's rays to be hitting you. So it is a very interesting phenomena. I mean, it's well worth anybody's time. It's it'll make you think, you know, for days after you witness one of these events. It's very good.
What is, and I guess I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but
please do.
We've got a couple of minutes here before the next break, so this is a good point to throw this in. What is the strangest response that you have seen when someone sees these UFOs?
Probably the strangest was the one I had just a couple weeks ago, where a very good friend of mine that I spoke about earlier, who's very articulate, very smart, he's a Mensa member, we've talked UFOs forever, he couldn't put a sentence together. I asked him a question, and he kind of like gargled something at me, and he goes, you know what, my mind is just racing about all the things I'm trying to digest of what we saw tonight. And it was fun for me to see him that beside himself.
Have you personally seen what Ed talks about with the UFOs shooting at each other, shooting beams of light? Have you seen that?
Oh, good question, Kevin. Well, I'm going to let the cat out of the bag. This is nobody knows about this. Just a couple weeks ago, I was filming a craft. And it lit up. And what I mean, they get real bright. A lot of times when they get real bright, there's an altitude change. It's almost like they've hit their boosters and they're going off to outer space. So the wife and I are watching this guy, and he lights up and looks like he's going out to outer space. After that, he goes kind of behind a tree, so I quit watching him. I pan down, and when I pan back up, I see that there's a guy behind him coming in behind the guy that just took off. So I start following this guy, and I'll be damned if it doesn't look like a laser shot comes right out of this guy towards the guy that's behind the tree.
All right, we got to pause for the break. We'll pick up there when we come back. I want to hear more about this. Well, folks, as I promise you all the time, if you miss a single second of a Kevin Smith Show, you're going to miss a universe of information. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Dean, when we went away for break, you were just beginning to tell us about a UFO battle that you watched.
Yes, sir. Yes, I had, as I was saying, I had a UFO light up, and a lot of times when they light up, that means an altitude change. They're taking off further into outer space. And so I'm filming that, and this particular craft goes behind a tree in the frame. And then I pan away, and when I pan down, and then when I pan back up, I noticed that there was a craft I did not notice before that's behind the one that lit up and took off. So this craft is trekking the same basic direction as the one behind the tree, and all of a sudden it looks like a laser shot comes out of the second craft right in the direction of the first craft. And I do have this in my presentation for the Sedona meet. Now, the other interesting thing is, as this craft continues towards the tree, it continues going away from us, and then all of a sudden it looks like another craft that may have been camping out. It comes from behind the tree area, takes off like a bat out of hell, and unlike a falling star, it's a wiggly line, like it was doing an invasive maneuver. Not sure what it is, but that's what it looks like. Now, I'll add one other thing to the conversation. When Ed and I were in Laughlin, Nevada, we had this big craft, markedly bigger than most of the things we see, going across the sky. And Ed yells out to the crowd, he goes, people watch that thing. He goes, that might be a mothership. Now, what he means by that is there's these bigger craft, and sometimes, and Ed has this on tape, smaller craft will come out of the bigger craft. So he's telling us to watch it. Unfortunately, I was the spotter. I didn't have the luxury really to, when I find a craft, I move on to find the next craft so I can keep the crowd, you know, supplied with craft. So I'm not watching what's going on. So anyway, this big mothership kind of goes over by another craft that we had seen previously. And let me back up and say this. The crowd, when they would see a fallen star, they would yell out, oh, a fallen star, and that is brilliant to see. It's fantastic to see through night vision.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when this big craft got close to this other craft, everybody hissed and went, oh, and they go, oh, it's like a meteorite blew up. And personally, I didn't see this, but then Ed kind of comes over to me in the dark, and he whispers in my ear, and he goes, that one craft just blew up the other craft. And I go, really? I said, did you get it on film? He goes, no, I was talking. I didn't get it on film. But he happened to see it.
Uh-huh.
And that was right before us, you know, and a lot of people saw it. And it was funny that they described it, that it was a meteorite that blew up, opposed to like, oh, that's a fallen star. Like, there is a distinct difference.
Mm-hmm.
To the crowd, that was something I wish I saw, but I did not see that. But something I did see, Joshua P. Warren is a paranormal investigator down in Asheville, North Carolina.
Yeah.
And he's a pretty famous guy. He's been on TV. I think he wrote his first book when he was 13. He's been around the block, pretty well known. He was out at the conference, and I met him, and I invited him out to come out, and he goes, oh, yeah, I want to come out. And I said, good, well, make sure when you come out, you look me up, and I'm going to show you something through the goggles. So one night he comes out with his producer, a guy named Will, but they come out too late. We're actually wrapping up for the night, and we're packing everything in Ed's truck. All the people have left via the shuttle bus, and Josh and Will come out, and Ed says, well, listen, keep your goggles. Take a couple more pair of my goggles. Just bring them back to me when you guys are done. Show Josh what you can. So while we're out there, there's a phenomena where if it gets too late at night, things in the sky become less reflective, and it's harder to see things moving. And we were at that point where it was like 10 o'clock at night, and we were losing our window to be able to see the things in night vision goggles that we would have seen earlier much easier. But while we were out there, Josh noticed a giant V formation of craft. And he goes, guys, you see this? So we all turn and look. Will sees it. Josh sees it. I see it. This V formation had a long side and then a short side to the V. It wasn't like an even V. But then above this V, there was a smaller V, and it was symmetrical. Both sides of the V were exactly the same. So we look at it, and we just don't know what it is. It's moving slow, clear as day, reflecting the sun. And it looks like a flock of geese to me. You know, I live on a waterfowl migration route where I live here, and I see geese all the time, and that's what it looked like, but it was very strange.
Mm-hmm.
So to make a long story short, we go back to the hotel that evening, give Ed the goggles back, and Ed goes, you guys see anything? And I said, well, we really didn't see anything except this thing that looked like a flock of geese. And Ed goes, was there a V and one side of the V was longer than the other? We go, yeah. He goes, was there a smaller V above that V? We go, yeah. He slaps the table and he goes, man, I've been trying to catch this on film again. He goes, I've seen it a couple times. I've been trying to catch it on film for years now. He goes, what you saw was a tactical force moving. He says, the important people are in this part of the V, and if they get flanked, these guys move over here. And he starts explaining to us the whole tactical reason that it's set up the way it is. Now, Ed, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but Ed is a pilot, not only a plane pilot, but he's also a helicopter pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And so he knows some things, you know, about military and so forth. So this event, especially after talking to Ed, really motivated Joshua P. Warren. He ends up calling his wife on the East Coast and asking her to get a hold of Fishing Game. The next day, he gets a hold of the Mojave Desert University or something out there and asks them about migrating waterfowl during this time of the year. And basically, they basically said there's nothing migrating in or out of that area. And if we did happen to see geese, they're usually low enough where you can hear them honking if they're flying at night, and you can see their wings flapping.
Yeah.
And what we saw just wasn't even close to geese at all. It was a really special thing to see.
Do you think, do you have any theories about who is fighting out there?
That's a good question. I've listened to Ed and what he has to say about it, and of course, he's much more qualified than I. He's been watching this for years. Matter of fact, he's been watching it since he was a boy. I think the first battle he ever saw was at a campsite on a very clear night in California, looking up at the skies, and he could see them with the naked eye.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know. The only thing I can think of is this, is that aliens are probably a lot like people on Earth. You got good ones and you got bad ones. And you got people that are very motivated by money, and the Earth is rich in a lot of natural resources. And some people covet these resources, and it doesn't matter if it destroys the environment or the people or whatever they do. And there might be a sector of aliens out there that are just some kind of law enforcement, and they're like, hey, guys, you're not going to do this. And maybe that explains the battles. The only other thing I can think of is that we are technologically as advanced as some of these races that are coming in, and it's actually us up there just defending our airspace possibly, but I don't have a good answer for that.
All right, we are just 30 seconds from, no, we've got a little more than that.
Well, yeah, let me mention something.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a website. It's called UFONightShift.com, and for your listeners, there are some video clips on there. If they've never seen what it looks like to look through night vision goggles, you know, there's a little free thing where they can just go in there and take a look at that, and it'll give them some kind of idea.
Okay. And I assume that looking at those videos shot through night vision, we'll see some UFOs as well.
Yeah, I think I have two or three that are like a bug, a bat, a plane, but then I have a UFO lighting up, and then I have another one on there, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not looking at it right now. I get this thing occasionally where one UFO will be shadowing another one, and I steal that term from the military, and basically it means you act as if you're the shadow of another thing, and you'll see like two UFOs just...
And they sort of move together, I guess.
And they move exactly the same speed.
We have to take a break. We'll be back, folks, on the other side of this break. In a few minutes after the break, I'll open the phone lines for you. Get your fingers ready to do the walking, all right? Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Dean Warsing. Dean, I had to cut you off again right in mid-sentence. The floor is yours, sir.
You know, I can't remember what I was talking about.
Well, in general, we were talking about these battles and who is it.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, I really don't have a good answer for that. I mean, it could be that our government is technologically that advanced that they're keeping people that covet certain things that the earth has, you know, keeping them at bay, or it may be maybe there's a galactical type police force that kind of makes sure everybody follows the rules in the universe. I'm not sure.
Well, you know, I've been all different kinds of police. I've been a deputy sheriff. I've been city police as a patrolman. I've been city police as an investigator. I've been international police. I haven't worked for galactic police, but if they exist, I want to put my application in.
It'd probably be fun, you know.
You never know. You never know. I'd like to shoot some of those cool guns like you see on MIB.
Yeah.
Men in Black. All right, Dean, if you don't mind, I'm going to open up the telephone lines, and we'll invite our audience to give us a call. Now, before I open the phone lines, let me give you the phone numbers. 602-539-9580. If you can call that without it costing you long distance, use that number. 602-539-9580. If you need to call toll-free, the telephone number is 888-223-4599, 888-223-4599. Now, last night we were not able to do the flash messages, but we are able tonight. So if you live outside of the USA and you live outside of Canada, you can call those numbers. They'll work. Or you can use the flash message feature on my website. Just go to KevinSmithShow.com. Scroll down, and you'll see right under the little graphic that shows you about tonight's show, you will see the link that says flash message. Click that. Send me a flash message, and I'll read it on the air. All right, let's open up the telephone line, 602-539-9580. 602-539-9580, or toll-free at 888-223-4599. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario. Hello,
yes.
Dean. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Kevin.
Good evening.
Wow, amazing discussion tonight. Yeah, I was going to ask, the question I was going to ask is where you thought, who do you think was piloting a lot of these UFOs we see in the sky, whether they are secret military technology or if they are of extraterrestrial in origin. I strongly suggest that it's likely Anunnaki in origin, I think a lot of these things are, whether it's the powers that be on this planet not wanting to give the planet back to them, or if it's actually the old conflict between the two brothers again, I'm not sure.
Well, possession is 9/10 of the law. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah, I've heard that, and there's also suggestion that the Anunnaki have never left, so perhaps maybe it is the brothers going at it again. Have you done any research into that, Dean?
Kevin, I have not. The only thing I can add to this particular conversation is there is a speaker at the Sedona conference. I think her name is Joanne Richards. And her claim is that her husband was part of a secret astronaut corps that we've had, I guess, for years and years and years. And these are the guys that pilot these like extraterrestrial craft, if not extraterrestrial craft, that we've recovered. So I've never heard her before, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about that. But I don't know, Kevin, to answer your question.
What about Gary McKinnon's when he hacked into the NASA and Pentagon computers and came up with this evidence for the secret space program? Do you think there might be any credence with that?
I think there is a possibility. I think it's something that we should keep an open mind about. It would make a lot of sense in a lot of ways. it would work for so many fronts on the government, and also to keep things kind of normal for everybody else and still be able to do this. Matter of fact, it's rumored that we have astronauts that have been everywhere in our solar system with the technology that we have. If it's true or not, I don't know, but my mind is open to it.
All right. Thank you for the call, Kevin. And let's go back to the telephone line. And, well, I'm waiting on the phone system. Well, the phone system just hung up on a caller. Not I, but the system. So, caller, you can give us another ring. 602-539-9580, 602-539-9580. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, please, and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Debbie from Columbus.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi. I can't wait till I go to the conference so I can see this for myself. I wanted to ask Dean a question. Dean, do you think maybe that the occupants of the craft that we'll be seeing through the night vision goggles, do you think maybe they're aware that they're being observed by us here on Earth and they just might be doing some of these maneuvers for show, possibly?
Great question, Debbie. And I'm going to tell you a story. You know, when we go out and do night watches, when we see a craft so that everybody else can see it, we take a laser and we laser the craft. Now, a lot of times when we do that, we get a reaction from the craft, believe it or not. People will argue, oh, the lasers don't go that far. It's light. I mean, we can see starlight, and it's literally, you know, light years away.
Right.
But at any rate, one night, apparently we lasered a craft, and then it must have came back and got real low. So I'm looking in the sky, and this craft comes back, and it is giant in my camera frame. And for some reason, I will not pay attention to it. I just ignore it. If it was the asteroid that was going to destroy the planet, I mean, it was that big, and I just don't look at it. Fortunately, I have this on tape, and I'll be showing it at the conference. But this thing, I pan across it with my camera at least four times before I pay attention to it. And finally, it is so bright, it like takes off and goes to outer space. I almost think like the thing did like a Jedi mind trick on me or something. Like, nothing unusual is happening here. Don't pay attention to the craft that's right there in front of you. Just relax. Nothing weird's going on. Was almost how I felt this thing might have made me feel. It's an incredible piece of tape, and I will be showing it at the conference. But to answer your question, yes, I do believe they can probably take a reading, find out what our intentions are. They can definitely tell when we laser them. And if they're destroying each other via lasers, I'm sure they have some kind of laser detection capability for when they're being targeted by another craft.
Do you think there's a possibility that they could actually be cloaking themselves? And it could, like I said, it's almost like... you know how our military trains for, I'm an Air Force brat, actually, how our military does, like, maneuvers and things, you know, for training, and they have, like, what I would call mock dogfights. Do you think possibly that these craft could be doing that? And I know for a fact they probably do have cloaking abilities, that maybe they're just cloaking, and then it looks like that one is destroying the other?
Well, personally, I haven't seen a craft actually blow up. I've seen what I think is a shot taken from one craft to another. On the other hand, Ed Grimsley has. He's convinced at this point that he's seen craft completely destroyed by other craft. Do I think they could be mock fights sometimes? Sure. I think that's very plausible. But if I'm going to trust what Ed's telling me, there's actual battles also going on.
All right. Thank you for the call, Debbie. Let's go to this line. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
Hey, Kevin, I thought I heard you say one time you teach firearms.
That's correct.
You don't use...
I used to teach firearms. I don't do that anymore.
Oh, I just wonder if you used tactical night vision, because I went through that course, and we did. We used them when they taught me.
Mm-hmm.
Plus also basically welding blackout glasses, you know, like we was going in a window or going in a room dark, so, you know, you'd be used to it. So I just wonder if you had anything like that that you tried to use that you might be able to use to see in space. Does he agree that, like Ed, that a cheap pair, you know, something that would be more in our line, you know, a couple hundred bucks, would be a waste of money?
Well, I have seen some cheap Russian pairs that were really good, actually. But, yeah, that's probably a real true statement. Probably you pretty much get what you pay for, and the cheaper pairs just don't have the clarity that the better third generations have. And not even all third generations are equal. I have a pair of binoculars that are a far cry under the goggles. It would be nice to find a retailer that sold these things where you could actually go into a dark room and try, you know, several different makes and models. I haven't found that yet, but that would be nice if you could do that.
Yeah. You say you're on the East Coast?
Yes, sir, Terry, yeah.
And you say you could see pretty much on the East Coast just as well as on the South?
Yeah, Terry, I wondered if there would be a difference because, you know, Area 51 and so forth out there, but doesn't seem to matter. Looks like it happens everywhere.
I was just thinking there's not as many big cities and you can get away, you know, get out of the way of the cities and stuff, you know, out west, where here in the East, you know, we got a lot of clutter and city upon city, you know. And mm-hmm. I just wonder if that made a really big difference.
Well, it's nice to get to an area where you don't have a lot of ambient light that kind of interferes sometimes with the goggle use. And if you can find suburban-type areas and stuff like that, you're fine.
Okay.
All right, Terry, thank you for the call. The telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, is 602-539-9580. 602-539-9580, or toll free at 888-223-4599. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. Okay, we're not hearing the caller. Again, the telephone number, 602-539-9580. If you need to call me toll-free, you can do that at 1-888-223-4599, and we would be more than happy to take your call. Dean, you know, what Terry was asking makes a lot of sense. It seems to me that if you were in a city area, you would not see as clearly as you would out in the country because of the ambient light. But I have to say, I was in Hollywood with Ed Grimsley, and we didn't go out into the country, and there was ambient light everywhere, and boy, what you could see was phenomenal.
Yeah, it probably doesn't make, I mean, I'm sure it makes some difference, but I tell you what's even more of a factor is when I have a full moon, mm-hmm. It's more of a nuisance to my goggles. It'll streak my goggles. It'll leave streaks in the tube.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's excited. The photons have excited the tube so much, it kind of leaves like a trail for a while.
Mm-hmm.
The full moon is probably more of a problem than the lights you would get from a city, probably. And there's no way to escape that. If you're on planet Earth, you're going to have to put up with that.
Yeah, it's kind of there. There's not much to do about it. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, hi. My name is Mike. I called in last night with my brother, James.
Yeah, Mike.
I have a question for the guest.
Sure.
How you doing? I was just wondering, like, have you guys ever shot a beam up at one of the UFOs and had a like have them shoot something back at you, or like, are you even worried about them shooting something back at you?
Good question, Mike. You know, I have worried about exactly who I'm arousing. So far, so good. I'm still alive. The biggest reaction I've had from taking a laser beam and lighting up the craft is I'll get them to change course. Being a good observer, one of the things you want to do is when you see one of these crafts moving in a certain direction, kind of pick out a star in front of it that it's going exactly towards. And then when you hit it with the laser, you will see course corrections where they'll dip down or they'll dip up. And it seems to be in an effort to get out of the laser beam light. And this happens pretty often. The other phenomena I get is sometimes when I light them up with the laser, I call it dancing a jig, even though they're not dancing a jig. It almost looks like they get, I don't know, maybe I want to say shaky. They look weird. Now, you got to remember, these things are small and they're in outer space. So if they're moving, you know, 10 feet left or right, it's going to be a very small movement to my eye. But I do see movement, and sometimes I see major movement where they really change direction.
And I have one more question.
Mm-hmm.
Ever seen the video on the internet about where the UFO is flying over the Earth and a beam of light is shot up at it and it takes a straight beeline out of the area?
I've seen it.
It's that NASA footage. I have seen that. And it is very impressive.
All right. I want to thank you for the call. Let's see. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, is that me, Kev?
That's you.
Oh, hi. Yeah, it's Boomer calling, British Columbia. How you doing tonight?
Good.
Good, good. Hey, I'd like to ask your guest, as you know, Kevin, I've got the good Generation 3 night visions, too. I'd like to know if your guest has seen any of the triangle crafts at all.
Did you say your name was Boomer?
Yeah.
Excellent. You know what, Boomer? I haven't seen anything that close that I could distinctly say for sure that it was a triangle. Now, sometimes we see a very fast-moving craft that Ed refers to as deltas. And I think a delta shape is a triangle. Now, I have seen things move very fast, but I couldn't distinguish that they were a triangle shape. I hope that makes sense.
Okay, yeah. Well, this is, I've had these goggles, these good high-end Gen 3s since last August. And I'm pretty much out there almost every night for at least a couple hours. And
excellent.
This triangle craft is basically invisible other than the three points, which I think are the anti-grav pods that are glowing. But right in the center of the craft is a very, very faint flashing light. So you know it's a craft, not actually like three satellites, eh? But it's always going down the coast. And, I've got it 7 minutes of it on video finally.
Excellent.
And I've seen one battle.
Wow.
So far. But nothing
fantastic.
Blowing up, just like you said, eh? Like lasers. It could be communication, even. I don't know. But I've seen a couple shots of lasers at one, and I actually got that on video here last week. So,
wow.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah, it's a fantastic area. I imagine we can spend a whole lifetime looking through these things and documenting what's going on and just be fascinated for the rest of our life. No problem.
Boomer,
And one other thing I'd like to ask, what power is the handheld laser you're using?
Well, I have several, and the general ones, I used to go with the 50 milliwatt, but I find that there's a lot of crummy lasers on the market, and now I usually go for the cheaper ones that are like the 30 milliwatt, and the 30 milliwatt from some manufacturers work just as good as the 50 milliwatt, but...
Oh.
They're all kind of crummy. If you really want a great, great laser, you're going to have to spend probably a couple hundred dollars. And there's a place called, I think it's called dragonlaser.com. You can get a laser on there that'll pop a balloon, and that's what I use now. But it's almost too much to the camera. It looks like a lightsaber going off.
Overpowers it. Yeah.
Yeah, but the what convinced? Go ahead.
He didn't say anything.
Oh, I'm sorry. What convinced me to get it, though, was we had a phenomena where we had a very interesting interaction between two crafts, and Ed was doing the camera, and I was pointing it out. And because we weren't right beside each other, he could not make out my laser pointer, and we missed it on film. And I said, by golly, I'm going to invest in a really good laser where nobody can ever mistake seeing my laser, especially if we're, 50 feet apart from each other.
Yeah.
So that's why I got it.
Boomer, are you still on the line with me, Boomer?
Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
Boomer, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Kev.
Yeah. You think about it, and if you feel comfortable with it, send me a little bit of your video, and I'll put it up on the website.
Well, actually, I was going to offer you, Kev. I haven't shown anyone but my family the video, so I was going to send you the whole video, the whole disc.
Outstanding. All right. Thanks much. I appreciate it. All right, folks. We'll get that up on the website when it arrives. The telephone number is 602-539-9580, or if you need to call me toll-free, feel free to do so at 1-888-223-4599. Now, if you're outside of the USA or you're outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message, all right? And we happen to have some. I've got one here that says, Kevin, the chat room is not working properly. Well, we'll take a look at that again. It is brand new reinstalled chat room, so it should be working. It was working today. One from Gordon in the United Kingdom, and he wants to know, Dean, if you recommend image intensifying goggles, the ones that amplify the available light, or infrared goggles, which show the heat signatures. And are there any available that combine both features?
I have no experience with either of those. There's more than enough light in the night sky with the night vision, the third generation night vision. So I'm not sure what an amplified device would do for you, but I don't believe you really need that. And the heat signature, that mm-hmm. would be an interesting thing. I know the guys on Ghost Hunters use a heat signature type infrared camera that gives them some pretty neat results sometimes, but I don't know how that would be in the night sky.
All right, from Bob in Australia, do you think this, let me read this. Do you think this is global? And would we be able to see them here in Australia?
Yes and yes. I think this happens everywhere on the planet, and I don't believe it matters what continent you're on.
All righty then. We have to take a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Dean Warsing. And, Dean, we've got some another flash message. This one actually, this is good. But I have to stick with my rule. If you're in the United States, the telephone number is 602-539-9580. Or 888-223-4599. And we would love for you to give us a call and ask that question, Dawn. All right. Dean, all over the world, people are waking up to this. But all over the world, night vision equipment is not readily available. In some countries, you can't buy it.
No, sir.
And it's becoming, I think, a little difficult here, isn't it?
Well, there's a rumor that along with some kind of assault rifle ban, they wanted to add night vision equipment. And I don't know anything more than that, than it's a rumor that I heard. And Ed feels it might be because of his efforts that they've hit their radar screen, and they might want to make this not available to our average guy. Now, the other thing is, Ed and I are not allowed to leave the country with the night vision goggles that we have. And there was a gig we were entertaining in England, and because of that problem, we may not be able to do it because of the night vision goggles are still, I guess, pretty much a military secret as to how they work exactly.
Hmm, okay. All right. From Hobart, Tasmania, Jeff has sent a flash message that says, can you please tell us who the maker of the night vision goggles is and the model that you use?
Sure. You know what, though? The weird thing is, the maker is not clear, and I know that sounds really dumb, but the outer shell is made by somebody, and then the inner guts is made by several companies. The important thing to know is that the night vision goggles are called PVS-7s, and they're Generation 3, and Ed and I both buy Alpha Select tubes, which is a tube that's senior to, like, military grade. It's supposed to be the best tube. Now, the tube is the thing that allows you to see in the night sky, and all tubes have blemishes. And the Alpha Select is supposed to have less blemishes than what is usually acceptable by the military.
All right, so these are like the best you can get, huh?
They are. And now, there is a Generation 4 coming out, but Generation 4 is not necessarily better. Generation 4 originally was something that the military wanted because they wanted the ability to go from a very dark setting to a very urban setting and not have their soldiers be blinded by, like, streetlights and stuff like that with their night vision. So my understanding is Generation 4 has that ability to move between lighted and non-lighted areas, which is probably no good to us for what we're doing.
Yeah, and just for those who have never looked through a set of night vision goggles, let me explain. If you were in a dark room and someone lit a match, it would put out light enough that you could see features around the room, but you would never say that it's a bright light. But if you look at that same lighted match through night vision, it will almost blind you. They're really sensitive, and it's extremely bright. And, you know, there's just a whole lot more light coming off that match than your naked eye sees. And those night vision goggles do see it. Dean, do you think that you mentioned that Ed says that it may be because of the work he's doing with night vision that it's kind of come up on the radar screen of the so-called powers that be, and that maybe that's why they're beginning to try and clamp down on it. Do you think that there is a concerted effort to keep us from seeing these UFOs?
Boy, that's a good question. I'm still sitting on the fence with this. Ed feels convinced that, and, you know, rightfully so. I mean, the guy, he gets messed with all the time as far as his email goes and his cell phone. And he's had some really odd things, and a lot of weird things happen. And Ed's an honest guy. He's telling the truth. These things are happening. But I'm unsure how damaging our governments feel that we're looking through night vision. And I could be totally wrong. They might be like, hey, we can't have this, you know. Once you open up the whole UFO box, it creates such a problem. I mean, you know, once you accept UFOs, then you got to go, okay, well, how'd they get here? And then once you answer the question of how they get here, and then you start to answer the question of why are we burning oil and gas when there's these other technologies available, and then, you know, our whole economic backbone is based on, the dollar is based on oil, basically. So it does create a lot of problems, and especially for a lot of rich people. So I might be way underestimating, you know, how damaging they're perceiving these night vision goggles, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that very wealthy people are just like very poor people, and that is you can mess with them a lot, but if you mess with their money, it's on. They're going to defend their money.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I can't say that I'm much different from that. You can mess with me. But there are two things that will absolutely get both my feet down your throat in the blink of an eye, and that is mess with my family or my money.
Yep.
And the money, the reason I'm that way about the money is because that's how I support that family. And so if you mess with my money, you're messing with my family, and you're going to get an instant and extremely negative response.
Yep.
And rich people are no different from that.
No, I agree 100%. I mean, you know, money's a very important thing on this planet. It allows us to, you know, it's opportunity. I mean, it allows us to do many things, and it actually allows us on a very simple level to survive, to feed, you know, to eat. So people take that real serious.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely do. All right, now where do you go from here? I mean, you're seeing these things in the sky, you're taking people out and showing them these things. What's the next step? Is there a next step, or do you just keep doing this?
Well, I think there is. What my game plan is I'll continue to take people out, and I never go out now unless I'm filming. I film everything, and in the last 2 months, it's amazing what I've gotten in 2 months. I can't imagine what I'll have in 2 years. So I also go around and speak at these different events, and as I accumulate more and more evidence and great filming and learn better how to film and so forth, these things will go into my PowerPoint presentation. I'll constantly be upgrading that. The other step for me is I have contacted two colleges that are in my vicinity. One's in Maryland and one's in Delaware, and the Delaware one's actually a pretty big college. And what I'm thinking about doing is actually teaching a course called, you know, UFO Night Shift course, where we take people one day in classroom and we learn how to be a good observer. We learn to figure out low-orbiting satellites, how fast they track across the sky, how many degrees per minute, how to measure a degree with our hand, how fast satellites go. And then we can really start to distinguish when we see a UFO. And then the rest of the class would probably be three nights going out on night, you know, night watches, recording. The next day's class, we would review the footage from the night before. So that's my next step. And both of these colleges seem to be very interested. They've asked me to make an outline for the class. And I have a meeting next week with one of them on how to proceed forward with it.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Well, Dean, do you think that night vision technology is entirely a human invention, or do you think it's as a result of reverse-engineered alien technology?
That's a good question, too. I dare to say I don't know. who was it, Phil Corso?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, apparently a lot of things came down that highway from crashed UFOs. We have It slips my mind what it's called. What's it called, the light that goes through the tubes?
Are you talking about fiber optics?
Yes, fiber optics. Thank you, Kevin. I couldn't think of what it's called. But many things that we have commonly today originated apparently from UFOs, from what Colonel Corsell tells us. You know, that's a good question. It's really neat how night vision goggles work, how they take a photon, which is a piece of light, and they convert it to electron, and then they charge it up a whole bunch, like, you know, 50,000 watts, 50,000 volts, and then it's shot through a screen, which I guess it's converted back to something that we can view, I guess a photon, and that's how we see with night vision. It is a really neat technology, and it's kind of sophisticated, so I don't know.
Phil Corso said that these little alien grays, and we see those big black eyes in all the drawings, he said that's not just part of their eye. That is night vision. And apparently they had this night vision built into the windows of their craft as well. And very, very interesting. Now, you told us about seeing this one UFO and then another one appears behind it and shoots a beam of light at it. Have you ever seen groups of them fighting?
I have not, though I have seen groups of UFOs, but not fighting.
Mm-hmm.
I have a piece of film where probably five different UFOs are going in different directions in the frame.
Five going in different directions?
Yeah. It's not a squadron.
Mm-hmm.
They're just randomly moving in the frame.
Now, I would assume that you have seen squadrons of them moving all together.
Well, that is a treasure to see, and Ed has great footage of that, but I am still waiting to get my own footage of that. The closest I've came to a squadron is these, on a couple different occasions, I've gotten crafts that are shadowing each other.
All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with Dean Warsing and your telephone calls. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Dean Warsing. The telephone number is 602-539-9580 or toll-free 1-888-223-4599. The telephone is open. And if you have a comment or a question for Dean, feel free to give us a call on either of those numbers or send us a flash message if you're outside the United States. Flash messages that come from inside the USA or if they come from inside Canada, they normally don't even make it to my screen. But if they do, I don't read them. That's reserved for folks who just live outside of the calling area and it would be international long distance for them to call. But feel free to use that. It's on my website. You just go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, and you'll see the link that says Flash Message. Very quickly, let me remind you that all the music on The Kevin Smith Show is from independent artists, and most of it comes from either of these two sites, garageband.com or music.podshow.com, and we thank both of those excellent services and the independent artists for supplying the music that we use on the shows. Now, Dean, how much am I looking at if I decide that I want to buy a set of these night vision goggles, the ones that you use? How much money am I looking at here?
Well, the listed retail is like $3,900. I think if you call Ed, his guy can get you Alpha Select goggles. I think $3,200, $3,300. I think in that ballpark.
Okay.
They are a big investment. A very technical piece of equipment. And unfortunately, I guess the biggest consumer of night vision equipment is our military. And they don't seem to care what they spend for things. So that leaves us poor consumers with a pretty hefty price tag.
All right, let's go back to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Yeah, Terry.
Yeah, you didn't get too many calls, so I just wondered if I could slip in again. I'd like to ask your guest if he could tell at what altitude that most of this activity is pertaining to. I mean, comparison, I suppose you could compare it to, like, our satellites and then where you see these things at. Are they consistently in a certain orbit, or, you know, can you see them from here to the moon? And I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Gotcha. Great question, Terry. You know, it's a very difficult question to answer. I think that I see things at different altitudes, sometimes higher, and then sometimes the low altitude, like the band that our satellites are in. I think it's from 380 miles to as low as 155 miles. But the problem is we don't know how big the object is that we're looking at, so therefore we can't ascertain how high it is. So what I did in my research is I threw away miles per hour, the size of the craft, pretty much altitude. I just threw that all away, and fortunately, astronomers have been working on this equation since the beginning of time, and they've lent us some really great tools. And that is, you know, from horizon to horizon is basically 180 degrees. And what we can measure is the degree of change that a craft moves in a given time. Most low-altitude satellites do a complete circle around the Earth in 90 to 100 minutes. For mathematical reasons, let's say 100 minutes. That means they travel at 3.6 degrees every minute. So if you take your fist and ball it up and hold it out on an extended hand, the width of your fist is about 10 degrees. That means it would take a satellite to travel the distance of your fist about 2.5-3 minutes. So that gives us an indication of the speed at low altitude. But these are all general, but good. I mean, they're good tools of measuring. But to say speeds or how high something is very hard at this point. Maybe someday with laser technology, you'll get to the point where we can pop a craft and right on the readout, it'll tell us how high it is.
All right. Now, you're talking about the width of my fist that's balled up out at the end of an extended arm. Is about 10 degrees, right?
Yes, sir.
And a satellite will travel that 10 degrees in about how many, 2.5 to 3 minutes?
2.5 to 3 minutes if it's doing a 100-minute orbit around the planet.
Okay. Now, if you compare that to some of the UFOs that you've seen through night vision, how many degrees at what speed have you seen them go?
Much, much faster. I've had craft it almost seem to travel horizon to horizon in a minute or two. I mean, that's how fast some of these things are moving.
Okay, so the width of my fist in 3 minutes for a satellite,
mm-hmm.
and that's 10 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about 180 degrees in a minute.
Minute or two. Yeah, I've seen them that fast. Well, I take that back. The Delta crafts are so fast, it's almost unmeasurable. They're here and gone in a flash.
Mm-hmm.
Gone. So discounting those, the other things that we see, yeah, I had a craft the other night we were watching a craft, and then all of a sudden, from the right, this other craft comes, and it's in the same frame. It's moving 10 times faster than the other craft that I'm looking at. Both look to be about the same size, but it's just screaming. I bet it did horizon to horizon in 2 minutes.
Have you given any thought to what sort of propulsion system these craft, whoever they are, may be using?
Well, I kind of like what Bob Lazar said about when he was supposedly working at Area 51. He said these crafts had two types of propulsion systems. One was they had the ability to manipulate gravity, where they were constantly like falling forward in space, if that makes sense. And then I think the other propulsion system they had, they actually bent space and time. But the reason I like that is sometimes when I watch these craft, they almost look like they're shaky or like falling forward. And I always think of that, you know, Bob Lazar saying that. That's my only thoughts on their propulsion systems. If, you know, in the Myers case, they talk about tachyon drives and stuff like that, and I just don't know enough about it from the movement of these crafts to really say what they use.
All right. Have you given any thought to the possibilities? Well, we'll have to get your answer probably. Well, you could do it real quick because we've got about a minute here. Any thought to, are these the same craft that we're seeing coming and going from the oceans, from the water?
Oh, I do believe so. If you have the ability to manipulate gravity and possibly space and time, water's not a problem. Water is the same equation as air or atmospheres or space. You can go in and out of water as easily as you can fly through outer space or our atmosphere. No problem at all.
All right. Dean, I want you to give us your website again.
Oh, thank you, Kevin. It's UFONightShift.com. And there's some video on there and some pictures, and free to anybody that wants to take a look at that.
All right. UFONightShift.com. All one word, UFONightShift.com.
Yes, sir.
Dean, I want to thank you for being with us. If you will, stay on the line with me. It's been fascinating. But stay on the line with me for a moment as we reach the close of the show here.
Will do. And thank you, Kevin. I really appreciated the opportunity.
Oh, you're certainly welcome. All right, folks, listen, Dean is going to be one of the speakers at the Ed Grimsley UFO Night Watch Conference. I'm going to be there. David Sarita is going to be there. Josh P. Warren is going to be there. It's going to be a great conference. You need to get your tickets at UFOSkyWatch.com. All right, that's a wrap. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.